Best-selling author Ayelet Waldman's new book, A Really Good Day, How Microdosing Made a Mega Difference in My Mood, My Marriage, and My Life, is her firsthand account and experience taking microdoses of LSD, the effect it had on her, and the ethical problems it presented. To be clear, Ayelet did not drop a tab of acid. Rather, she took a microdose, 10 milligrams under her tongue, a few times each week for 1 month. What drove her to using LSD? It was perimenopause and years of accompanying treatments with psychiatrists and psychologists, meditation to little or no avail. When her mood storms became intolerable, she did what many of us do. She fell down an internet rabbit hole, eventually receiving a vial in her mailbox. Within a month, Ayelet joined the ranks of scientists and civilians successfully using LSD in therapeutic microdoses. Again, the name of the book is A Really Good Day, How Microdosing Made a Mega Difference in My Mood, My Marriage, and My Life. And it is a great pleasure to welcome Ayelet Waldman back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you, too. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks very much for being on the show. What led you to want to write about this experience?
What led me to want to do it, or what led me to want to write about it? Those are two different questions.
I know. I want to know about writing about it, to the point of, okay,
well,
I've done this.
What led me to want to write about it, you know, I taught for many years at the University of California at Berkeley's Law School. I taught a course called The Legal and Social Implications of the War on Drugs. And I've worked for a long time in drug policy reform and in prison reform. And I really believe that the way that we approach drugs in this country has been incredibly destructive. I think the only people who have benefited from the United States war on drugs are, frankly, the South and Central American cartels. You know, The El Chapo, he loves the U.S. war on drugs. And I am trying, I've been trying for my whole career, and I'm trying now to encourage people and the government to have a more science-based, sensible approach to the drug war. So writing this book, which is in part a diary of my experiment, which is a history of the drug war, a history of psychedelics. You know, what are psychedelics? A deep dive into the neurochemistry of psychedelics. And it's also just, you know, funny, too, because my husband said to me, how could you have written so serious a book and have me laughing so hard? It really was activism for me, frankly, advocacy. What led me to try the LSD, that was despair, depression, and a feeling like I had no other way to feel better.
One of the things that I found interesting in the book, as I mentioned in the introduction, that this all came as a result of perimenopause and you wanting to control the mood disorder that you had as a result of that. What I do want to note is that you had been very successful in treating your PMS for a fairly long time with SSRIs, and that became rather predictable and okay. So then what happened as you reached perimenopause that you said, okay, this is now something that I could even consider?
Well, what happened was this. My mood disorder, it was diagnosed as premenstrual dysphoric disorder. The easy way to think of that is just really, really bad PMS.
Right.
And the treatment for that was developed by my psychiatrist and psychiatrists at the Women's Mood and Hormone Clinic at first at UCSF and then at Stanford, was a week of SSRIs taken right before your period. And it was incredibly effective for me. It really, really worked. I just felt stable. I had equilibrium. It wasn't like I was 100% on my game. I still got into Twitter flame wars and did stupid things that I regretted and you know, felt bad. But I was more or less stable. And then things started going off the rails. And the reason was, when you're perimenopausal, that period before menopause, you stop being able to predict your periods. You don't know when you're going to get them. Maybe you'll have two in 1 month. Maybe you won't have one for 3 months. So I couldn't, because I didn't know when my period was coming, I couldn't time my week of SSRIs. So it was like I existed in this permanent state of instability. And then my mood just took a nosedive. And it got worse and worse and worse until eventually I became suicidal.
You also write that it was the relationship with your husband, the great writer Michael Chabon, we should note, who you start to have times where those altercations that you are fighting with your husband, and it's taking longer to recover, and you're desperate because you want to get life back on track.
Exactly. You know, it's funny because the way I think of it, I think of that period of time as the time that my marriage was in trouble, that I was so awful and so unlovable and so miserable to be around that my husband was going to leave me. And my husband thinks of that time as a period where I was so blinded by my own self-loathing and despair that I thought he was going to leave me. Mm. He wasn't going anywhere. And he says, and I think he's right, that it is a feature of my mental illness that I felt so unlovable that I was convinced he was going to leave. But ultimately, the effect is the same. The bad feelings, the awful, the despair, whether it was real or not, whether he was really not going to, it was really going to go anywhere or not, it felt like he was.
So explain to us what happens when you microdose. What does that do, and what did it do for you in specific terms to treat the symptoms that you described a moment ago?
So a microdose is a dose of a chemical, in this case LSD, small enough to have a measurable cellular response, but not so large as to have a perceptual response. So if someone wants to like have a trip, which by the way I've never had, they'll take 100 to 200 micrograms of LSD. What I took was 10 micrograms, a tenth or less of a typical dose. And you know, if I slipped you a microdose of LSD right now, you wouldn't notice. You would go about your day. You'd drive your car. You'd cook dinner. I don't know if you cook. I don't really cook. Yeah. My husband cooks. I chop. I'm the sous chef in our house. You'd go about your business. And at the end of the day, I'm betting that you would look back and you would say, huh, that was a really good day. And that's really what it was like. You know, I remember about the first day that I took it, about 90 minutes after I took the little drop, I looked at my window, and it was a beautiful spring day here in California, and my dogwood tree was in bloom. And I thought, oh, look, the dogwood is in bloom. The blossoms are so pretty. I didn't think like, oh, the blossoms are dancing, or whatever people think when they trip. I don't know what that is. I just thought, what a beautiful tree. And I am not normally a stop and smell the roses kind of girl. I just get from point A to point B as fast and as efficiently as possible. And the fact that I was able to notice something beautiful, the fact that when I was in a period of such anhedonia, such misery, nothing had seemed beautiful to me for as long as I could remember, and suddenly I could see what was before my eyes, that was almost miraculous.
You write about this in the book, but it does take tinkering to get you to a point where you reach, quote unquote, normal.
Yes, the one month wasn't just perfect. It wasn't like every day of the month was a really good day. I think that would kind of make you crazy if every minute that was if you felt great all the time. There were days that were up. There were days that were down. But what I didn't have was the same level of despair. It was like it jump-started me out of that despair. The person who has sort of popularized microdosing is a doctor named James Fadiman, a psychologist who was a researcher into the connection between LSD and creativity at Stanford and in Silicon Valley back in the 60s when that research was legal and licensed. And the protocol that Fadiman has developed is a sort of three-day protocol. You take the microdose on day one. You don't take it on day two, and yet day two is usually even better than day one. And then day three is kind of a reset. It's just sort of to make you to give you insight into what your normal situation might be. For me, while I didn't feel the same despair that I had felt before, that seemed to be gone. I did, I woke up on day three and I thought, oh, it's you, there you are again. But again, I wasn't counting the pills in my medicine cabinet to figure out how many it would take to kill me. And that was a really substantial improvement.
Where does one, and I ask this question realizing that it, however you want to answer it is fine, but where does one go to get LSD? I mean,
are you asking for a friend?
Yes, I'm asking for a friend. It just seems to me that that's not like the easiest thing to go on and say, hey,
I'm
microdosing. Oh, you're in Berkeley.
I thought it was going to be easy. I'm in Berkeley, California. I thought basically like LSD was going to be, you know, there's going to be some faucet in the main square in People's Park, and I'd turn it on and LSD would pour out. I don't know. But like, my kids call me a basic bee. I'm like the lady in yoga pants getting the skinny mocha latte.
Yeah.
The Venn diagram between Ayelet at Waldman world and LSD world, there's no Venn in that diagram. It doesn't cross. So I was trying to find LSD and asking people, and everybody was just sort of like, I don't know. But that's crazy. And then eventually somebody said to me, you know, a friend was telling me once about this professor and somewhere in the Bay Area, I don't know where, who was really, really old, and he'd been experimenting with LSD his whole life and had been microdosing for decades. And I think the guy's dying. Maybe he has some extra. And I said to this friend, that is the stupidest story I've ever heard. There is no elderly professor Candyman giving out the remnants of his LSD stash. That is just dumb. And then 2 weeks later, I go to my mailbox, and there with, like, you know, my utility bill and the Hannah Anderson kids clothes catalog is a little package festooned with adorable, brightly colored, very old stamps, like from the 80s and 90s, with the return address Lewis Carroll. And I open it up, and there is this tiny little cobalt blue bottle. And though it doesn't say drink me, that's kind of what it wanted me to do.
Yeah.
And I am not stupid. I am not going to go drink something that arrives in my mailbox. I ordered an LSD testing kit because I wanted to make sure I knew what I was taking. That's a big harm reduction message I give all teenagers, mine included. You do not take drugs if you don't know what you're taking. You can't just take something that somebody sells you and says is Molly. You have to actually test the drug. And you know where you can get drug testing kits? You can get them on Amazon. So that's what I did.
The fact that there are several times in the book you refer to this as an experiment, don't you? I mean, that's what you were referring to.
It was a personal experiment, yes.
So at what point did you have an end date going in, or did you develop that of when this was going to say, okay, I'm done with this?
Look, I'm a lawyer. You know, I went to Harvard Law School. I don't break the law, or not regularly. I pay my taxes. Thank you very much. I wasn't comfortable with breaking the law, but when it came down to the choice of breaking the law or committing suicide, I was willing to do it for a month. I said going in, you're going to try this experiment for a month. And if at the end of the month, you'll reassess. And what happened was at the end of the month, I felt so much better that at first I couldn't imagine not continuing because I wanted to keep feeling better. But I am so catastrophically bad at illegal activity. I eventually found a number of a drug dealer. I texted the number, and then I became convinced that I had fallen prey to a DEA sting and was basically packing my bag for prison and cursing Piper Kerman for already having written Orange is the New Black so that there was not going to be a sequel to my book.
Yeah.
So then I decided, okay, illegal drugs are not in your future. You be an activist, and then maybe if you work hard enough, there will be enough. The research will continue. There's amazing research going on at UCLA, at NYU, at Johns Hopkins on psychedelic drugs and how they can alleviate depression and anxiety, and they're showing remarkable effects. You be part of that movement, and then maybe one day you'll be able to call up your doctor and say, hey, you know, prescribe whatever crazy name they come up with for a microdose of LSD. You know, it'll sound like, I don't know, Schmamillify or something.
So you are here to tell us that it is possible and you have still really good days without microdosing now.
Yeah, it's a lot harder. I'd have more of them if I was microdosing.
Yeah.
I have a lot more of them. Maintaining my equilibrium is not easy. I do a lot of therapy. I do a lot of different treatments. It is frustrating to know that there is a therapy that worked for me personally that I can't use. It's very frustrating. But I work really, really hard all the time. I am not as successful as I was during that month. I won't lie. Things have been much harder. But I'm doing my best. You know, it's been a lot harder since November, I'll tell you that much. I mean, that sounds flip, but there are a lot of people experiencing a lot of fear and anxiety and heightened levels of depression and since November. And I think we all have to work really hard to protect ourselves and to protect the people around us. And, you know, if you're feeling really awful, my website has some resources for people who feel desperate and in despair. Suicide is never, ever the answer. And I'm also available over email if anybody wants to talk to me. I know what it's like to feel so bad, and I know how important it was for me. You know, Carrie Fisher was a huge inspiration for me. She was a woman who was open about her bipolar disorder,
yeah,
and who was also successful and funny and you know, a model for people with mental illness. And it broke my heart when she died, and I really wanted to. You know, I feel like all of those of us who are in any way in the public eye, who suffer from the same illness, need to be open about it. You know, what's peculiar is that the stigma against mental illness is worse than the stigma against LSD. People are more embarrassed when I tell them I'm mentally ill for me than they are embarrassed when I tell them I tried LSD.
And there's something wrong with that, right?
Really is.
How are you? Do you have to go, or can I keep you for another 2 or 3 minutes?
I think you can keep me.
Okay. So this fascinates me because, I mean, that says a lot that people are more likely to tell you about their experimentation with drugs than they are with the fact that they have problems, that they are, there is either a mental illness, there is an anxiety, depression, panic, whatever the case may be. And don't you think that half the problems that we have with drugs are people who are self-medicating just to try to figure out?
Oh, I would say it's a lot more than half.
Of course,
I would say
that
the majority
you.
Of people who use illegal drugs are self-medicating.
Yeah,
they're in pain. And, you know, it is the stigma that causes the harm. And as a society, we have an opioid crisis right now. People are dropping dead of heroin abuse. They're not dropping dead of heroin abuse because they're looking for a good time. They're dropping dead because they were in pain and they were looking for help. And we need to give them that help and not be so afraid. And I fear that may be my clue that I have to go.
Okay. I think it is.
It was a pleasure talking to you. I'd love to come back on the show and talk more.
I hope you do. Ayelet Waldman, thank you very much. The name of the book is A Really Good Day, How Microdosing Made a Mega Difference in My Mood, My Marriage, and My Life, published by Knopf. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.